This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 59, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast, and it looks into evidence of the afterlife. And if you want to hear the extended version of this interview, which is an extra 20 minutes, you'll need to join the Patreon campaign. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. And this week I'm talking to Sev Tok about her book, You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. Sev Tok is a speaker, author, transformational coach, ufologist and experiencer advocate. She earned a Bachelor of Science degree in biology from Loyola University. Sev's ET contact started at age 10. She came out in 2018 as a speaker at AlienCon and through her book. Sev is featured in the Canadian TV docuseries Encounter, UFO Physical Contact. She was Master of Ceremonies at MUFON's International Symposium in 2022 and is MUFON's Assistant State Director for North Carolina, a field investigator, and on the Executive Committee of the Experiencer Resource Team. A planet and star system is named after her in the Star Wars Galactic System. You can find the Sev Tok star system and planet in Wikipedia, and you may have heard her planet mentioned in Star Wars Andor. Hi Sev, thanks a lot for coming to the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Simon. I've been looking forward to it. Thank you for asking me to be your guest.
So we're going to be talking about your book, which is You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. I was interested that the very beginning, I think it's the first line in the book, says, yay, he's back. And this is about an alien landing in your back garden?
Yes, I'm not sure if it was in my backyard, but it was outside. And it was an alien being that visited me from the age 10 to 12, so many times that I lost count.
And it's a thing where not many people respond like that to encountering ETs saying, yay, he's back.
That's an interesting comment because I was excited to see that one. But when I first started seeing the grays, I was not excited to see them. I've now changed my perspective that I now like the grays and I see that they were helping me. But for a few years, I thought the grays were victimizing me and messing with me and toying with me on purpose. Now I like them.
Yeah, it's like the grays have got to work on their social skills.
Their PR isn't good, right?
Yeah. At that point when you met this ET outside your house, how old were you? Because you were small then, weren't you?
Yes, this is my first conscious memory of ET contact. I was 10. And I would find myself at night, I would go to sleep, and then in the middle of the night, I would just find myself outside and waiting, standing on grass, and looking up to see a spaceship arriving. And each time it arrived from a different direction. And it would come and hover right over my head, so close that it completely blocked out the sky. And I was so happy to see it because it felt like I was seeing a brother or a relative. And the ship would land, stairs would descend, and then he would come down. And he looked more human than non. He had he was young, in the 20s, 30s, dark hair and dark clothes. And really the only difference I could see were his ears were a little different. They were just a little more elongated. And he was checking up on me. We would just talk. He just wanted to make sure I was okay. I do not have memories of going on the ship, if I did. And then all of a sudden, ding, I'm wide awake in my bedroom in the morning. And I'm confused because being in the bedroom didn't feel as real as being with my space brother. And so I'm 10, I'm in fifth grade, and I don't know what's happening, but I tell myself just to ignore it. It's time to get dressed and go to fifth grade and try and be normal. And that's what I did. Now, I could have told my parents because my parents were very open. We were all believers. But I never did, and I don't know why. I never really told anybody until the book came out in the summer of 2018. That book was really the reveal of all the secrets that I've been hiding for decades.
And you say that when you were with that guy, it seemed more real than normal wakingness. Is that right?
Yes. And it's there are no words to describe why I say that. It's just felt like that.
Because people who have a near-death experience, when they're out of their body, they say their perception is so much better than normal wakefulness. So, do you
Yes.
feel that sometimes your interactions with ETs were out-of-body experiences?
Oh, yes. Yes. I have had out-of-body experiences myself. Now, some of them, yes, we're talking about consciousness here, where we're everywhere. But when we focus on a particular aspect of ourselves in a particular, if there's such a thing as being in a particular point, then that's the reality that we focus on. So, I also had an experience that changed my life when I moved here to the Inner Banks of North Carolina in 2017, which prompted me to come out. Now that with that experience, I had two red X marks burned into my tush. So that was that an out of body experience of my consciousness? Well, I had marks on my body, so my body must have gone somewhere too. So I believe it's a combination of your body traveling through time warps and also just communicating through consciousness with other beings, which we all do all the time. That's nothing unusual. It's just that some of us are more aware of it than others.
If we get back to this guy that you were meeting, there was a final visit and there
Yeah.
were other children there, and it was like it was his final one and he was going.
That's what we felt. We were very, very, very sad. So the final one, I was 12, and this time I was with a group of kids, and I had never been with a group of kids before. Before it was just him and I. And we were all lined up, and I couldn't see their faces, but we were all about the same height, so I figured we were about the same age. And we just watched the ship fly away, and we were very sad. Because we knew we weren't going to see him again. And then I had this knowing in my head. What popped into my head was, okay, it's time to do your work now. Now, at age 12, I didn't know what that meant. What work? But now I think I am starting to understand what that work is.
Isn't it a thing that you kind of volunteered to come here and you had a mission?
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the hypnosis session because I dedicate an entire chapter of it in my book. I pretty much word for word explain everything that happened. Now, at the same time, I am on the line when it comes to hypnosis. What is hypnosis? So, what I experienced, was that real? Was that imagination? Because I am not 100% certain about what hypnosis is. When I talk in public about my experiences, I pretty much only talk about the experiences that I have conscious memory of because I have a lot of them. I tend to not talk too much about my experiences in hypnosis because I don't know what they are. You can help me with that. You can help explain that to me. I don't dis-hypnosis, and I know hypnosis is a fantastic way to clear and process. It's a very effective means. In my hypnosis session, which lasted a while, it was over an hour, maybe a couple hours, I had my ex in there with me. And he's very, very, very logical. And he witnessed the whole thing and he took notes. And he said, I don't know what that was, but it was real. Because you changed your voice several times. You used words that you never used before. You said you had knowledge about concepts you've never talked about before. So it felt real to me and it felt real to him, a very logical person watching from the outside. So I realize hypnosis is important. I had someone, a hypnosis practitioner, tell me that if you believe something to be the absolute truth, then it shall appear as the truth in your hypnosis session. That has made me think a lot about what hypnosis really is. So if I think a lie is the truth, could I be misled under a hypnosis session?
I don't think so. I got a different viewpoint. I've found.
Oh, good. I'd love to hear it.
Because I've taken hundreds of people through past life regressions. And I've been hypnotized so many times and taken through past life regression. And I never lost a feeling of being skeptical during it and questioning what's happening.
Yeah.
And there are things that have happened to me. And this is, I've had emails from clients saying things like this as well, is where I saw something in the past life regression that was later confirmed. And it's something that I couldn't possibly know. And so there's definitely something coming through there. But we know hypnosis isn't 100% reliable for recovering memories because that's been proven. And so that's why you can't use hypnotic regression in a court. You know, it's not good for witness testimony in a court, but it is useful for other things. And also, I see some terrific healing happening, whether it's psychological or physical, through past life regression therapy. So it is powerful and very useful, but as a means of recovering memories that are 100% reliable, it's not that good.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating, fascinating ability that we have to do that. If we find a practitioner that we can trust and a practitioner that doesn't have any agenda, it can really be a marvelous experience. I had gone under before. I had had a regression before for past life because I'm a transformational coach and I do interdimensional, multidimensional readings for my clients, and a past life always comes up. I also do past life readings. And I wanted... What I do is I tell my client what the past life is that is relates to something that's going on in this life to help them clean, clear a process in this life. But I was looking for someone, this is back when I was living in Maryland and in the United States. And I was looking for someone who does hypnotic regression for past life so I can recommend that person to my clients because I can tell them what the past life is, but I don't take them there. And sometimes when you go there, the healing and the experience is just amazing. So I found someone and I went to her and she was excellent and we ended up being good friends. So I had a past life regression with her and it answered some questions for me. I've also seen my past lives outside of regression, in a meditation or in a deep relaxed state. So it's possible to visit your past lives then too. I also don't like to call them past lives, Simon, because I believe everything is happening all at once. I like to call them other consciousnesses that were split into a variety of consciousnesses. And so I just like to call them consciousnesses. But past life is really the word that everyone explains. But I don't think it happened in the past. I think it's all happening now. So as we heal something in one life, we really heal it in all our consciousnesses.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we could really get into this conversation, but this is supposed to be a UFO podcast.
But it all happens in the same playground.
Yeah.
The consciousness playground.
Because I'd be interested to do, say, a past life reading with you, and you don't know about the past lives that I've seen in my regressions, and see if you come up with the same ones that I saw in my regressions. Be an interesting experiment.
Yes, but you've had so many that I might also come up with ones that you haven't seen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We have a lot.
I know. I did a regression today with someone, and he got a message through that he'd had 870 lives so far.
Yeah. And then are we supposed to consciously remember all of them? You know, there's a really good movie out now called everything, everywhere, all at once, or something like that. Have you heard about it?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Oh, you've seen it. Yeah, I don't like the violence. I wish it wasn't violent. But the message and the way it was portrayed, I thought was excellent.
Yeah, it's like she's tapping into other versions of her in other universes.
Yeah, and alternate realities. So she didn't, yeah, I really liked how she said, you know, if I hadn't have, when she was talking to her husband, if I hadn't have been with you, I would have been this famous actress. And this is something that relates to all of us because every time we make a decision, we pop into an alternate reality.
Yeah, this is something I was reading in your book about time warps or portals and how sometimes you might have ET contact and you'll be picked up and you might be gone for an hour, but you come back at almost exactly the same moment you were taken.
That is possible. I can't say for sure that's what's happening, but that's definitely possible.
Yeah, it's this idea that ETs can work outside of normal time. Maybe that's how they travel between the stars as well.
So the reason I've come to this conclusion is because of what happened to me in 2017 when I moved here to the Inner Banks of North Carolina. I moved here from Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C. And on the second night here, and now at this point, I had already been in contact with the Greys and I was scared to death of them. And so I moved here and the son of a guns followed me here. And so on my second night, I had contact with them and they burned a red X into the left cheek of my tush. And I woke up in the morning and I was unpacking dishes in the kitchen. And it felt like something bit my butt and it hurt like a little bug. So I yelled over to my ex, I think something bit my butt. Will you look at it? And he goes, yeah. So I walk over to the living room and I bend over and he's not saying anything. And I'm like, oh my God, I could sense something was wrong. And so I'm like, well, does something bite my butt? And he goes, yeah. And there's also a red X. And in that instant, I knew it was the Greys and I thought they were messing with me. And he showed me the picture and it was pretty stunning. I have the picture in my book, on my website. It's easy to find. And it is an X that's 1.5 to 2 inches wide. And it's made up of nine small red circles that look like they were burned into my skin. And I've had people measure the distance between the little red circles, and they're all equidistant. And when I ran my finger across it, I couldn't feel it. And I was scared and I was very worried. And I just said to him, and he was stunned. And I just said to him, we're going to forget about this. We're going to forget we ever saw this. We're going to forget this ever happened. Because that's what I had been doing for decades, just tossing everything in the back. Because I had so many things that I was just like, I was just telling myself, okay, just pretend like that didn't happen. Okay, pretend like you didn't see that. The scars on the body, the marks. I had a scoop of skin, a chunk of skin missing from my wrist. And when I looked down to see it, there was no blood. There was no scab, nothing, clear, chunk of skin gone. And I just told myself, oh, isn't that funny? Okay, I'm going to ignore that. And then I see marks on my body, geometric marks that are perfect. And I would think, oh, look at that bug bit me in the shape of a perfect triangle. There'd be lights on in the hallway. I'd feel entities stepping on my bed, touching me. I just kept ignoring all of it. So when an X appears on my tush, once again, I'm like, we're going to ignore it. And this is not healthy. I do not recommend this for anybody. I finally had to face it. But then, 9 days later, I came to in my bedroom, and I always come to the same way. It's an instant wake up. There's no grogginess. It's just ding, and your eyes just pop open, and you're completely alert. And then I had this download, this gush of a memory that I was on on this bed that resembled a hospital bed. And I was lying on my side, and I couldn't move my arms, and I couldn't move my legs, and I felt paralyzed. And it was a dimly lit room. I saw one piece of furniture and I sensed that there was something behind me and I could move my head. So I turned my head around and I came face to face. I locked eyes with a gray who was doing something to my back. He was just a couple inches from me. And I describe in the book, looking into his eyes was like looking into pools of oil. And I was scared to death. And so I turned around and ding, I'm wide awake in my bedroom. And I'm thinking, oh my God, oh my God, if I have another ex on me, like I'm not going to be able to handle it. This will take me over the edge. So I got out of bed and he was still sleeping and he always woke up before I did, but not this time. And I went downstairs and I waited for him and I was scared because I was scared that I'm not going to be able to handle it if there's another ex. And there was also something I knew that I had never known in any other ET contact that I've had. And I knew that that bed that I was on in that room was on the moon. And so he comes downstairs and I tell him my memory and then I ask him to look at my butt and there's silence and I'm silently freaking out. And he said, there's another ex and it looks just like the first one. And it's directly across the first one, this time on the right cheek. So I had two red X's burned into my hiney. And he showed me the picture and it's really hard to describe what an existential crisis feels like. Because in that moment, I just didn't know what was real anymore. I didn't know who I was anymore. I didn't know what I was doing in the middle of the night, meeting aliens. I didn't know who we were as a race. I didn't know what was going on in the whole galaxy. It was just complete confusion. And I started crying. And he asked me, is there anything I could do for you? And I couldn't think of anything. And so I just calmed myself down. And I was also really angry at the grays. I knew it was the grays. And I just told myself, I need help. And that was the first time in my life that I realized I should seek help. But I didn't know how I was going to get that help. And I just figured that would organically happen. I just like to let things organically happen if I need something to happen. And that's what I did. Eventually, a few months later, one of my best friends who lives on the island of Maui in Hawaii told me I should watch the movie Unacknowledged by Dr. Stephen Greer. So I did, and that lit something inside of me. And after I watched it, I went to my computer and I told myself, okay, I have to find somebody. I have to find somebody to send a picture of this ex to, but I have no idea who to send it to. So I heard in my head, MUFON. I didn't know what MUFON was. So I Googled it to find out it's the largest UFO research organization in the world. And on the website, I saw a picture of Kathleen Marden. And I told myself, she's the one. She's going to help me. So I emailed her and she responded right away. And we Zoomed or we Skyped for an hour and a half. She was very generous. And it was one of the most important conversations in my life. And she validated all of my experiences. And I asked her, what am I supposed to do with all the information the Grays have given me? Because they've given me information about the hybridization program and our future fate. And she said, I can't answer that, Sev. That's you have to figure out that. Because at that time, I saw myself standing on stage talking about this. But I was still in hiding. I had not come out. So to me, that was a crazy vision.
I was going to mention the hybrid situation and your experience when you were taken somewhere by the Grays and they showed you a baby.
Yes, yes. They showed me a baby in a tube and I made a drawing of it. I was in this dark room and I was standing in front of this tube that was about as tall as I was, a little taller and about as wide. And there's a baby floating on the top of the tube in what looked like a liquid. It was a glowy, glowy blue liquid. And I'm looking at this baby, shocked that there's a baby in a tube, breathing, and its eyes were wide open. And they were the bluest eyes I've ever seen in my life. And his legs were positioned so that I couldn't see its sex, but I knew intuitively it was a boy. And I felt nothing for the baby. And I felt something behind me. So I turned around and there were three grays, tall, medium, and short. And this is before I knew the grays even came in different sizes. And they were nice. And they said, we're just going to stay back here and we're just going to wait. And you can take all the time you need. There's no hurry. And that didn't make sense to me. And I turned back around and I looked at the baby and none of it made sense to me. I didn't feel anything for it at all. And ding, I'm wide awake in my bedroom. This was 2012, 2013, something like that. And I didn't tell anybody. I just hid it for a long time. And I was reminded of that when I was in Roswell in 2016. I went to Roswell. It was spur of the moment, completely unexpected trip. And then my ex and I actually had a very strange experience in our hotel room. And I was given information about the hybridization program and reminded that that baby was part of the hybridization program.
Did they tell you that that was your baby or they just left you there to look at it?
At the time when I first saw it, they did not say that to me. When I was reminded of it in Roswell a few years later, it was not directly said, but it was implied. And I've also had MILAB experiences, military abductions, which I'm just coming out talking about because actually they're the hardest for me to process, harder than my ET contact. I have 5 or 6 conscious memories of MILAB. And my first MILAB experience happened the night that I talked to Kathy Martin. And my phone was cut off too, the day that I talked to Kathy Martin. Because I told Kathy, I said, Kathy, I'm afraid of the government. Because, you know, you hear all these stories about experiencers and the men in black tapping their phones, knocking on their door. And she said, yeah, that happens. But it's happening less and less and less and less. And it really doesn't happen that often anymore. But it used to happen. So then after my talk with her, I called my mom. It was a landline. It just went dead. It had never died before. It never died since then. It died for about 10, 15 minutes. And then that night I had this MILAB experience. Where somebody, this government type of young man, was asking me questions about the flight path of UFO.
Did you ever have a MILAB where you saw ETs and people together, or is it always just humans?
Yeah, I had one. So out of my 5 or 6, there's 2 of them that were bad. One of them absolutely torturous. It was torture, mental torture. So the one I'm about to describe to you was a neutral experience. And I've been in this room twice where I am sitting at a table and I'm looking at the room beside us. And what's separating us is a glass wall or a glass window so I can see into the next room. And there's always these young men, their 20s or 30s, short hair, just a really drab clothing. Everything is drab. It just feels like governmental. And I don't know if it's the government. I don't know who these people are. And he's standing next to me, and across from me in the other room is brought in a very tall gray. And he says to me, this is the original gray. And they take that one out and they bring in a shorter one. And he said to me, this is the hybrid of the original. And then they took that one out and they brought in the little short one. And he said, this is a hybrid of the original. And with each step down, there is a loss of sentience. So it felt like the littlest one was more robotic And they are the ones we usually see. They are pretty much specimen takers, is what I've discovered. And another time I was healing sickly hybrid babies. There was a human male doctor and a human female nurse. And I was in this hospital type of session scenario. And they handed me this very sickly baby. It was spitting up blood. And the doctor wanted me to heal it with my hands, with my energy. And then they gave me a second one. And it was also coughing up blood. And they had normal human looking heads, and they were just swaddled in a lot of cloth, tons and tons of cloth. The second baby started rolling off the table. And so I grabbed it, but I just got a hold of the cloth. So the cloth came off. And then I saw the baby's body and his neck and its arms. And it was as skinny as my pinky. And I freaked. And then ding, I'm wide awake in my room again. I don't remember anything else.
Do you ever get the impression that there are humans living on other planets? They're just as human as us, but they live on another planet and they interact with these ETs and they work with these ETs. So the people you saw there were not Earth humans? Am I getting too science fiction now?
No, anything is possible, Simon. Anything is possible. I also wonder how many hybridization programs are there? And it seems like the hybridization program that the Greys are involved in with the humans, and they gave me information about that, more information about that in Roswell, which I can tell you about if you'd like. It seems like there's also another hybridization program that's a little messed up with Greys and humans. Is it when humans get in there that they mess things up? Because it was when I was with the humans that I got these really sickly hybrid babies. Could it be that the Greys, their hybridization program is a healthier one? Maybe the kids aren't as messed up, but when humans get in there, we mess it up because we don't have the knowledge that the Greys do. I don't know. These are just things I think about. How many hybridization programs are there? How many are humans evolved in? How many do they mess up? These are just, I don't have answers for these.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more complicated than a lot of people think it is. You know, there's a question of what is the aliens' agenda? But there are so many aliens. They have all sorts of agendas.
Well, in Roswell, I was told that there are millions of people involved in the hybridization program, and most of them don't even know it. There are millions of people actually having ET contact, but they don't know it because it happens in that interdimensional state where it feels dreamy and hazy. And so people think it's a dream, but it wasn't, it was real. And they told me that the humans that are involved, for the most part, are humans that are highly sympathetic and empathetic and have stronger than normal psi abilities. And I was told there were a few Greys that visited, or I was taken to, I'm not quite sure. I was told that the Greys wiped themselves out were on the verge of wiping themselves out because they lost the ability to be empathetic and sympathetic towards one another. And so that's what they're doing. They're splicing and dicing and mutating and designing these entities that are very loving and very kind. And there's billions of these embryos, they told me. And also there was a fear in the galactic system that if a negative group of beings got a hold of these embryos, would they turn them into killing machines? And I was told, well, these beings are so loving and so kind that they make horrible killing machines. So that's not a worry.
When you were growing up, I was interested to see you say that dead people wouldn't leave you alone.
It's a funny way to put it. Yes, my whole life, even as an adult, and I used to do dead people readings. I don't do them anymore, but often dead people do come up in my sessions, but I prefer not to do that. If somebody wants to connect with a dead person, I just tell them, please go to somebody else. I just don't prefer to do that anymore.
Is it true also your father, you think, had supernatural experiences?
Oh, he did, without a doubt. Absolutely, he did. So did my mom and so did my sister. Now, did they have ET contact? I was told that they did, but either they thought it was a supernatural experience, not an ET experience. And I was also told that my mom and my sister weren't interested. They didn't want it to continue. I was the only one out of the family, I was told, that wanted it to continue and was interested. But my entire family has had supernatural experiences, a lot of them.
And you had a dream of 9/11, is that right?
Yeah, Simon, I did. A few years before it happened, it was a dream of this tall glass building beside water, and an airplane came and went right through it. And when I woke up, I was just shocked because it felt real. And I didn't say anything to anybody because in my mind, I'm like, God, that's a weird dream. And it also evoked fear and confusion. And I didn't say anything. And then, what was it? Maybe 3 years later, something like that. It was the exact same thing I saw on television.
Do you think at all that the interaction you had with ETs from when you were very young has kind of opened up this psychic ability of yours?
Yes, I do. Because ET contact happens in that, like we were talking about earlier, in that playground of consciousness. And when you're spending time in that playground of consciousness, your psi abilities strengthen. I just want to say you don't have to have ET contact to strengthen your psi abilities either.
Right, okay. Because in the book you say when you embark on your spiritual journey, the alien contact increases.
Did it increase or just was my awareness of it increasing? Because as we start this personal journey of introspection, processing, clearing, healing, understanding, our personal frequency is raised. And when we have a higher personal frequency, our reality changes. And also we're able to know things that have a higher frequency. All knowledge, all knowing, everything has a frequency, not just things that we can touch, but ideas and memories, everything has a frequency. And when we align with that frequency, we can remember it, and we call those aha moments. But that moment, that knowing was always inside of you. You just couldn't reach it because you just weren't similarly aligned with the frequency of that knowing. So that's why I personally think I think it was a combination of both, Simon. That's such a good question. A combination of me starting to remember because my frequency was being raised. And these memories of ET contact, they are very high frequency memories. And also because I started focusing in on that and being more open to it, then I was also being visited more. So it was both.
And you would wake up without clothes on. You went to bed clothed and wake up without them.
That happened for several years. Yes. I would also hear like voices, like a distant radio playing. I would see lights in the hallway. I would wake up and there'd be no lights on in the house. I would feel entities on the bed also touching me. Now, some of these were supernatural experiences too. Because what just about always happens is if you're having supernatural experiences, you're going to eventually come in contact with an ET because we're all living in that same realm of consciousness. And if you had made ET contact, there's a really good chance that you're going to start having supernatural experiences. They're connected.
This is what people are starting to work out, isn't it? It used to be, there'd be people who investigated UFOs and they thought it right. They're just metal ships. It's kind of like Star Trek, people going through the stars. And then the other side, you'd have people who are interested in the afterlife and reincarnation and near-death experiences. And these two would never come together. But now we're seeing connections between all of them.
Yes, I love that. I'm so happy about that. And that's what's so good about this movie that we were talking about earlier, that we both watched the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once or something like that. Although it was very violent, which I wish wasn't the case, how belief of consciousness, the belief that we have a variety of consciousnesses called past lives, and how we can connect with them and remember them and actually use them, use the knowledge we gained in them and the experience we had. Well, I'm talking in the past tense, but I really believe all these lives are happening presently, and that we can use them in this life. I just thought that it was just really portrayed really well, other than the violence. But I understand that, well, at least here in America, Americans love murder. So I understand some violence had to be in there in order for it to be a hit show, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's the drama and the action. It's fast moving. It's entertainment, isn't it?
But it can also be mind-blowing. Some people might not ever have even thought of that concept or watching the movie. I like that.
Like, my favorite UFO film is Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and that mm-hmm. doesn't have loads of fighting and action in it and evil aliens. But that's nowadays, that's all they seem to make with these films is fighting and evil aliens.
Yes, it's unfortunate. And what I'm trying to do is to dispel that belief that ETs are bad, or they're here to hurt us, or they're here to take over. I really wish that Hollywood would just stop doing that.
Well, you felt that greys were not nice and you were scared mm-hmm. of them when you were younger, but now you have a totally different point of view. So was there one incident that changed your viewpoint, or was it a gradual thing?
It was gradual. For most of my life, I assumed the perspective of a victim. I've been married twice and they became abusive. And I just thought everyone was victimizing me. I thought everything was everyone else's fault. And after my second divorce, I took a really good long hard at myself, look at myself. And I realized, oh, I'm the problem, because I'm the common denominator in both of these marriages. So I was no longer angry at them, because I realized I took it. Like, I accepted that. Why would I accept such behavior? And I decided I have to find out why, and I don't want to do it anymore, because I do not want to get into another relationship that's abusive. I can't do this anymore. So that journey led me to the hurdle, one of the biggest hurdles I had, of ET contact. Because that personal spiritual journey, what it does is it aligns you with the most authentic version of yourself that you can be. And we all know that when you express yourself authentically, you're really the happiest, most fulfilled, and the most successful that you can be. It's very important. So I was on this path of authenticity. And in order to reach my goal, I had to face the hurdle of ETs. That was the biggest hurdle. That was the last one. I saved it for last. Oh, I don't know. I might have more. I can't say I'm totally healed, but that was a big one. And so with the help of Kathy, with the help of these two exes, with the help of the Grays, I realized that I had to lose a victim vibe. And then once I did that, I saw that the Grays were not victimizing me. That was just my perspective, because I had on the lens of victimization. They were actually helping me. And that's why I changed my mind.
And do the Grays still visit you?
They visit, not in a 3D manner. They don't visit in a 3D manner. The visitations are more in consciousness. But I have come in contact with other beings in a 3D manner. And I still get geometric shapes burned into me. I'm not sure I know all the beings that are in touch with me, or that I'm in touch with. As we all are. It's like there's nothing really special about an experience, or other than the fact that they have a conscious awareness of it and are trying to deal with it. And it's a hard thing to deal with.
Yeah, I can imagine. Can we talk about the hypnosis session? Could you tell us, how did it start? Were you find yourself in a place where there's ETs in blue jumpsuits?
Well, it started because of what happened to my ex and I in Roswell. It completely freaked us out. He had an experience that he had something unlike anything he'd ever had in his life. And it freaked us both out. And so when I went back home to Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C., I told myself, okay, when I get back home, I'll feel better. And I didn't. And at that point, I was so afraid of the grays, and I didn't want anyone to know that I was making ET contact. I definitely didn't want my clients to know. I was still hiding everything. But it wasn't going away. What happened in Roswell was in the forefront of my mind, like every day, all day long, for months. So I finally confided in a friend. And she said, well, I know a regression therapist in Virginia, Diane Kanzler, who's since moved to Pennsylvania. And I went to her in hopes just to have some more clarity on what happened in Roswell. And it was also good that my ex went with me because he experienced what happened in Roswell. He did not go Endelbert. He was taking notes and he was there with me. So that's what prompted me to go. And what came out, as I described almost word for word in my book, well, some past lives came up, and I, all of a sudden, I was in front of these group of beings that looked more humanish than anything else, wearing these blue unitards, just one piece outfits, and with an inverted triangle on the chest. And I had the feeling that they were a part of a governmental group. I'm not going to use the word Galactic Council or anything like that. That's really overused these days, but just some kind of group. And I was part of them. Like I was saying, hey, and they were going, hi. And they apologized. And they said, we're really sorry. And I said, for what? And they said, we didn't know that it was going to be this hard to be a human being, and you volunteered for this. And I don't even remember if I had a response, because that kind of shocked me. And so I don't, Simon, I don't feel comfortable going around saying I'm from another group of beings and I'm here on a mission. I don't feel comfortable saying that, and I don't say it. And that's because, what is hypnosis? Did I make that up?
Yeah, I see. Because in that session, you talk about how there were three of you and you voted for this mission and you agreed to go.
Yeah. That's what they said. That's what came out.
And there's this idea that you've had Earth lives before, but this one was supposed to be easier, but it didn't work out that way.
Well, the thought that, well, it felt more like this was the first time I was coming to Earth as one of them. Did that make sense? Like they didn't have a lot of experience sending their type to Earth, so they didn't know how hard it was going to be. I guess they didn't understand how cloaked we are and how little we remember and how little we know. But I don't feel fully comfortable saying that I'm here on a mission from a group of other ETs. I know there are people who are very comfortable saying that, and I'm glad that they're comfortable saying that. I'm not.
Right, okay. But if I can ask, you know, it might not be real, like you say, but what is the mission?
It's convoluted and it's a lot, but basically it is to remind people that we live in a galactic community and we can benefit greatly by becoming friends again with the other beings that live in our community. And it would benefit us mentally, physically, and spiritually.
And have you gained information, not just in the hypnosis session, but in other ways that there is a huge amount of life out there in the galaxies?
Yes. Yeah, there is infinite. infinite amount of life in an infinite amount of dimensions, just keeps going forever. And so just a few years ago, it was, I think, in 2018, I was fully awake in my living room in the middle of the day. And these two light beings appeared, two tall light beings, mostly blue in color. They were gorgeous. And I couldn't draw them because they were made up of these ribbons of kaleidoscope-like light that was constantly moving and circling around. It was gorgeous. And a variety of blues and silvers. And every now and then there'd be this flash of a spring green, like in their throats. And they had two eyes and a nose and a mouth and two arms and two legs, but and two ears, but their faces still looked a little different. And they were bluish. And I was just stunned, and I was blinking. Every time I see something, I blink. And I even grabbed my phone to take a picture that they did not show up in the picture. And the first thing they said to me was, when you look into our eyes, you look into yours. And then I had felt so much love, more love than I've ever felt. I describe it as more love than you even feel from your mother. I had never felt anything like that in my life. And then they continued to talk to me, and I was taking notes at the time, and they were telling me about DNA activation and Tchaikovsky and Tesla and Disney. And I still continue to get information about DNA activation, how to raise your frequency. And so these are very loving beings. They are light beings. And I really cherish my communication with them. And there are other people who've seen them too.
And was there an idea that there's no such thing as junk DNA, that everything does something?
Correct. Everything does something. Our DNA is multidimensional, exists in a variety of dimensions. And our scientists don't know this yet. But as you activate your higher frequency DNA, you start to change. And the changes are significant and they're important. And as each individual transforms and expands their consciousness, then we shall collectively. And then as we do that collectively, then we'll start seeing the changes that we so desperately want in our society. More peaceful, more caring, and more loving, where we're not obsessed with watching people be murdered.
And you're talking about vibrations there and raising your vibrations. Is that something that the ETs can control within us? They can do it for us, and that's how people are moved, maybe through walls and ceilings.
Oh, that. Yes. Mm-hmm. That is how it happens. A raising of the vibration so that you're vibrating higher than the vibration of the wall.
And so they can also take you out of your body for the out-of-body experience. It's like they're removing your consciousness from your body.
I think so. But they're also taking my body too, because I have the two red X's. I'm really, at the time, the two red X's messed with me so badly. But now I'm really grateful, because they're my proof that that memory I had was not a dream. And I'm just here to tell people, you have these memories. Many of us have these memories that we can't shake. We call these dreams, that we might have had when we were kids, but decades later, we remember this so-called dream, and it evokes emotion. It's not a normal dream. I cannot remember my normal dreams from when I was 10 years old. I can't. But there are certain things I remember that are beyond a dream. They are a real experience. And I would just like people to know that if you're having this so-called dream that feels more real than this, that is giving you information that you never knew, that is helping you, that is providing this expansion of awareness, that is not a normal dream.
And the book is called You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens, and that's on Amazon, isn't it? And you can get the paperback and you can get the Kindle version.
Yes, I've been meaning to do a voice version, but I just haven't gotten around to it. I'll also be speaking at several conferences this year. Right now, the conferences that I know of are UFOCon in San Francisco in March. In May, the McMiniman's UFO Festival in Portland, Oregon. I'll be back at the MUFON Symposium giving a talk about what it's like to be an experiencer. I was honored to be the master of ceremonies at the symposium last year, and there might be a couple other conferences coming up.
Fantastic. And I'm going to put the links to everything in my show notes. And it's been great having you on the podcast. Thanks a lot for coming on and talking to me.
I enjoyed it so much, Simon. And if you get more memories, I want to hear about them regarding your ET experiences.
And that was an interview with Sev Tok about her book, You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. And if you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, which is an extra 20 minutes, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $7.50 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 240 episodes. On Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. I also release an extra episode of Past Lives Podcast every Thursday, and that's called Paranormal Stories. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. In my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regressions. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you've signed up to Patreon, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. And with your recollection of past lives, any of those connected with ETs?
What I saw in hypnosis might be an ET life, but from my conscious memories.